Hello and welcome to the Monday, April 7th edition of Juno Afternoon on KTOO News Juno. I'm Joan Partis, your Monday host. We've got a great show. We'll be talking with Jill Ramil about the Downtown Business Association. We'll also get details about Sexual Assault Awareness Month. We'll get a preview of the Folk Fest that starts tonight with musician Tom Begich. We'll find out about next month's Maritime Festival. All that and more. Stay tuned.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A new strategy was recently unveiled in Manitoba aimed at preventing human trafficking of women and children on First Nations in the Canadian province. It's called Our Circle to Protect Sacred Lives. More from Dan Karpinchuk.
The plan is to reduce the number of Aboriginal women and girls being lured into the sex trade after moving to big cities. The Canadian Women's Foundation says as many as half of the women being trafficked in Canada are Aboriginal, and it cites social conditions such as poverty, broken families, and addiction as some of the reasons. Alia Parizan is a 25-year-old Aboriginal woman.
My abuser was paying me as a child, and it happened for a long time, like 6 years of my young life. Could have like easily went into that lifestyle because I kind of really thought about it because it was so easy. I was getting money as a kid. I could get more money as an adult.
The campaign to end that kind of abuse will include a Sexual Exploitation and Trafficking Act, special prosecutors, laws aimed at criminal property forfeiture, and raising awareness to counter sexual exploitation. The strategy will also reach out to about 60 First Nations communities across Manitoba. While some praise the approach, others say a national inquiry on missing and murdered Aboriginal women would really highlight the issue. And a federal government initiative to look at family involvement in the trafficking prompted accusations that the government is looking to blame the families of the women who are victimized. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
The Cleveland Indians had their home opener Friday. About 30 demonstrators showed up to speak out against the team's Indian mascot, Chief Wahoo. As Brian Bull of WCPN reports, the protest was bigger and more diverse than last year.
As cars circled Progressive Field in downtown Cleveland, demonstrators chanted and held signs decrying Native-themed mascots as racist. Last year, there were about 8 demonstrators, mostly Native American. But this time, there was nearly 4 times the number, and many were black, including Zizwe Chaguka.
Those of us of African descent fought to get rid of racist images like Black Sambo and Aunt Jemima and Stephen Fetchit. But because of genocide against the indigenous people, they have very little power and very few numbers. So they need our help.
Fern Clements is with the Native group, the Committee of 500 Years of Dignity and Resistance. She appreciates the support and adds that since President Obama questioned the Washington Redskins' name last year, activists are energized and optimistic that Native monikers are on the way out. She hopes Chief Wahoo is the first to go.
Why don't we call the team the Cleveland Rockers? Back in the heyday of rock and roll, you didn't make it in Cleveland. You didn't make it. This is something Cleveland could be very proud of.
Tribes fan Jennifer Pierce arrived in face paint, braids, and a leather headband sporting Chief Wahoo. She says she's not bothered by the controversy, but isn't wed to the mascots either.
It's a caricature. Caricatures aren't supposed to be accurate, but I still love the Indians, whether Chief Wahoo's there or not.
Meanwhile, the Cleveland Indians have been ratcheting down displays of Chief Wahoo. Last year, his grinning face adorned pennants on the outside of Progressive Field. This year, he's been replaced by portraits of the players. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull in Cleveland.
Alaska tribal leaders are pleased a permitting bill was defeated last week in the state legislature. House Bill 77 was held in the Senate Resources Committee. Tribes and Native communities spoke out against the bill with concerns it would have silenced their voices in making decisions about natural resources. Tribes say they need to be included in any future proposed changes in the permitting process. According to a press release from some tribal leaders, more than 40 tribes and Native groups passed resolutions opposing the bill. On this day in 2003, the California legislature voted in favor of a mining and sacred places bill. The bill included new open pit mines and protected areas of the California desert to be completely backfilled. Tribes fought for sacred site protection from mining, including in an area called Indian Pass. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. With funding from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. The Convention and Tourism Department of the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce provides convention and event planning services for Native American organizations. Information at ahcnm.org. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Love to take photos? We love photos, and we want to see yours. Why not share them with KTOO and maybe win a bag of Heritage Coffee? Send your photos to share@ktoo.org with the subject line, Photo of the Day. Please include the photographer's name and a description of where and when the photo was taken. Each day, we'll post the best submissions on Facebook, and the photo with the most likes that week wins a bag of coffee. More details at ktoo.org/photo.
Yes, and this week's photo of the week is Ron Giles. So congratulations, Ron. You can check out Ron's and other submissions at ktoo.org/photos. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. It's Monday, April 7th. I'm Joan Pardis, your Monday host. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. And the weather today is rain. Heavy at times, highs around 43, southeast wind 15 to 25 miles per hour, gusts increasing to 35 miles per hour. Tonight, windy, rain, heavy at times. Tomorrow, rain showers. Tuesday night, snow and rain showers. And Wednesday, rain, then looks like rain and mostly cloudy through the rest of the week. But sometimes on Folkfest week, that sun does make an appearance, so we'll see what happens. So our first guest here on Juno Afternoon today is Jill Ramil. She is the owner of the Silver Bow Inn and the new wine bar there, and she's also the president of the Downtown Business Association. Hey, Jill, how you doing?
Hi, Joan. Thanks for having me. I'm excited about our quarterly visits.
Oh, good, good. Yes, for the Downtown Business Association. Let's start at the very beginning. So tell me about the purpose of the association and how many members you have.
We currently have about 60 members, although this has been an exciting year for us, and we are hoping to grow our membership to 100 for this year and even more the year after.
Sounds great.
The purpose of the, or I'll read you the mission statement of the organization.
Sounds great.
The purpose for which this organization is to promote, foster, and encourage downtown business success. The DBA acts as an advocate on critical issues that affect downtown business on a local, city, and state level.
Okay, that sounds wonderful. So there are 60 active members right now. And so what are the issues, the city, local, and state issues that the downtown businesses are facing right now?
Well, there's lots and lots of issues that we are facing. But this year for us is really all about reorganizing. As you probably know, our long-time president and tireless activist, Larry Spencer, passed away this past year. And we are really struggling to revitalize the organization and kind of pick up where he left off. He did so much that we're now trying to find other people to take over his many, many, many roles that he had. Luckily, we are being helped by the Juno Economic Development Council. Okay. They're kind of doing some background work for us because we're a complete volunteer organization. So we just needed some level of kind of program support for us to get anything done. And it's been good so far. Like, we've fixed our website. We're working on our website constantly. And now, for the first time ever, we have a way for members to pay online, which is a big deal for us. Instead, we used to sort of run around and beg people to write us checks. So we feel this is like a huge advancement, making it easier for our members to join. Our map is coming out soon, so the deadline to buy an ad, a border ad, and the map is coming up really soon. We print 75,000 of those downtown maps every year.
No, that's great.
Yeah, it's our biggest source of revenue that we generate, and it's a giant amenity of being a member to be listed in that map because there's so many people that read it.
Okay,
and use it.
So if people are interested in being on the map or having an ad in the map, how do they go about that?
They could email us at downtownjuno@gmail.com.
Okay, and then you'll set them up?
Yep, and then I will answer their email, and I'll point them probably at the website. They can look for the website also as well, which is You would think I would know that. Downtown Juneau, right?
Yeah, people just search for it. Google, whatever your search engine is. That sounds great. So do you have any upcoming events? So you have your big map things. There's a deadline, and that's obviously geared toward tourist season, correct?
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. And then we do. We have an annual membership meeting coming up, and that's May 7th. It is thankfully being hosted by the Flight Deck.
Oh, yay.
It's going to be at 5 p.m. All of our members, I hope people come and tell us their thoughts. It's hard. You know, if we're a membership organization, we need to hear from the members to know what to do for the next year and on. And so we hope people come out for that. And we haven't had a membership meeting in many, many years, so this is trying to bring that back as well. Right after the membership meeting, we have a very first-time event that we're trying out this year. Our most active committee is our marketing committee, and we invented an event called The Swagger. So it's going to happen. It's really for all of our employees, not the owners of the business who may come to the membership meeting, but it's for after the membership meeting, the Swagger will start, and we're going to go to many of our member businesses where we will get a big bag filled up with swag.
That sounds like fun.
I know. It should be really fun. And in between, we'll stop at restaurants and bars and have a little libation. And the goal of this party is that we want all of our employees to know more about each of our other businesses, because we all summer long, we get asked, where can I find the Patagonia? Sure.
Exactly.
All the questions that you get asked, and you're tempted to say, I don't know. We want our employees ahead of time to know the answers to these questions so we could help grow each other's businesses.
That sounds great. And I guess that's what the DBA is all about, is how can all the downtown businesses help each other grow?
Absolutely. And the new this year, for many years, we were really seen as the Retailers Association. There was a lot of people that said, well, why should I join? I'm a lawyer. I'm a doctor. I'm an architect. And because it was seen that we mostly just marketed for retail businesses, and this year we've made a very concerted effort to bring on the architects. And in fact, Evelyn Russo is on our board this year, and Greg Fisk, who's a consultant, is on our board right now. And we're trying to grow the professional membership, the people who support the retailers downtown. You know, we're all in this together. We need each other.
Exactly. And you also need all those different outlooks of how you can grow downtown,
right,
and how you can grow businesses.
Right.
So the professional sector, the professional services sector, makes perfect sense that they would be in there.
Right.
Okay. So to be a member of the Downtown Business Association, is there any criteria?
You have to be, I think, any business that is from the end of the road at Thane all the way to the Breakwater is actually in our downtown district. Other than that, I don't really think there's any stipulation. If you'd like to join, you're more than welcome to. We're currently looking for two new board members. So we're really looking for people to step up and volunteer. We're trying to get an active committee structure going, because we really can't do anything without the help of with lots of people doing a lot of things. That's how we'll get stuff done. And we have a very active marketing committee right now. There's an infrastructure committee talking about issues of housing, reporting to us on what's going on with the
waterfront.
Thank you. I'm pointing at the waterfront. The new Sea Alaska building is going up, and that's exciting. I'm watching that happen every day. And downtown feels like it's bustling, getting ready for the summer. And then our other committee is market finance. So, we need to have a healthy finance committee. And Greg Fisk agreed to recently head that up. And we're also working very closely with the JEDC, because on their strategic plan, which is their five-year plan, downtown revitalization is part of their plan. So that they're working very closely with us for the same goal.
Right, to grow downtown.
To grow downtown, which is good for the economy.
Absolutely, and also maybe a year-round, more of a year-round presence, too. That would be great.
Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah, I would.
It's my dream.
As a townie, I would think that would be great.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're talking with Jill Vermeule. She is the owner of the Silver Bow Inn and the Wine Bar, and she's also the president of the Downtown Business Association. We're talking about the Downtown Business Association, also known as DBA, which I guess is a pun, doing business as well. And if you have any questions, you could search them on the web, Downtown Business Association, or email them.
Email at downtown at downtown Downtown Juno at gmail.com.
That sounds great. And then there's an upcoming May 7th.
May 7th, the annual membership meeting. We hope that everyone comes out for that at 5 p.m. We're going to start at the flight deck. Then it turns into our swagger, which will end up, we're pretty sure is going to end up at the new Tracy's, which is right by Trove.
Oh,
way
wow.
Way down South Franklin. And it's going to have a route. We're going to walk all around and stop at many members' businesses on our way to the end point where we will have door prizes. One of the door prizes is going to be a Taku Glacier Lodge flight seeing trip, which Holly Johnson, who's on our marketing committee, donated for this event.
You know, it really, of course, Larry's passing was sad in so many ways. And obviously it impacted your organization in a big way.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes through reorganization, real change happens. Not, of course, that it was anyway
right.
a good thing that,
right.
you know, Larry.
Right. In so many ways, Larry was my mentor. I was on the DBA board for a lot of years and really looked up to him. And he was also the historian. He had all right. the information for so much history.
Right. But and all the infrastructure and everything.
Yeah, able to talk to the assembly on our behalf, knew how you even went about doing that. And I've been thinking about that a lot, which is not to stay in this position very long. We have to keep moving it so that it could keep changing and growing and bringing new blood into the DBA,
right.
I think is important.
And speaking of new blood, it just seems like there's a lot of new businesses down in downtown, because there's your new wine bar, which I went to this weekend, which is really fun.
Thank you.
It's really fun. And then there's just a whole bunch of new restaurants and new businesses, and it's going to be exciting.
It does feel
summer.
Very good. And I also live downtown, so I'm very excited about a new Indian restaurant coming in. Next door, the old Zephyrs, which is Salt, has a full liquor license now, so that is fun for me.
And the new Tracy's is moving into
Tracy's is
brick and mortar.
Her shack is not so shacky anymore, right?
That's great.
It does seem like a lot is going on.
Well, thank you so much for coming in today, and we'll have these quarterly chats.
We are. I'm looking forward to it. It's always fun talking to you.
Yeah, so we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
When you're alone and life is making you lonely, you can always go downtown. When you've got worries, all the noise and the hurry seems to help, I know. Downtown, just listen to the music of the traffic in the city. Linger on the sidewalk where the neon signs are pretty. How can you lose? The lights are much brighter there. You can't forget all your troubles, forget all your cares, so go downtown. Things will be great when you're downtown. No finer place for sure, downtown. Everything's waiting for you. Downtown. Don't hang around and let your problems surround you. There are movies. Shows downtown. Maybe you know some little places to go to where they never close. Downtown, just listen to the rhythm of a gentle bossa nova. You'll be dancing with them too before the night is over. Happy again. The lights are much brighter there. You can forget all your troubles, forget all your cares. So go who
Yes, that was Petulia Clark singing Downtown. And in case when I say Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show, you go, that means Jeff's running the board, he's picking the music, and you can see Jeff's stamp on every Juno afternoon, which is great. I'm Joan Pardis. I'm just merely the talking head. And our next guest is Lori Morton. She is executive director of the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault, and she's here to talk about details about Sexual Assault Awareness Month. Hi, Lori. Thanks for coming in.
Hi. Thank you.
So can we start with the mission of the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault? What is the purpose of that organization, and what are you tasked to do?
Sure. The council is a 9-member body, 4 public members appointed by the governor, and 5 state departments: public safety, law, corrections, health and social services, and education. We're housed in the Department of Public Safety, and our responsibility is a couple-fold: to fund shelters and rape crisis centers across the state, such as AWARE here in Juneau, and to coordinate the state's response to domestic violence and sexual assault. The last couple of years, with the Governor's Choose Respect initiative, we've been heavily focusing on primary prevention.
Okay. When you talk about primary prevention, can we talk about what that actually is?
Sure. Primary prevention is keeping something from happening instead of, after it happens, picking up the pieces. So it involves raising public awareness and moving people through that awareness into acting to prevent the violence. It's also working with children so that they grow up knowing appropriate ways to interact with each other, respect each other, to develop healthy relationships. And we have a couple of different programs going on in the state right now working with them, such as Girls on the Run, which is here in Juneau and Southeast, Coaching Boys into Men, which is also at Thunder Mountain in Southeast and in other parts of Alaska. The fourth R, the 3 R's: reading, writing, arithmetic. The fourth R is relationships, and it's a curriculum for 7th, 8th, and 9th graders on healthy relationships and preventing dating violence.
Wow, that sounds a lot. That sounds like a lot of programs. That's wonderful. Thank you for all you do.
Sure, thank you.
That's really... it sounds like very effective programs, and I know a lot of them just started in the past couple of years. Is that true?
Yes, that's correct. Juno was the first community really to bring in both Girls on the Run and Coaching Boys into Men into the state, and I believe this is their 4th or maybe even 5th year.
That's great. That's wonderful. So Sexual Assault Awareness Month, let's talk a little bit about that.
Sure. Sexual Assault Awareness Month is a concentrated period of time for people to engage in the conversation. We want people to understand sexual assault is not acceptable in our communities, that we're going to reduce our rates. You may remember the Alaska Victimization Survey. It was done in Juneau a couple of years ago, and it showed that 37 out of every 100 Juneau women have been sexually assaulted. We need to change those numbers. One of the ways that we are working on doing that is through a bystander intervention program called Green Dot Alaska. A red dot is an act of violence or a sexual assault. You picture Juneau on a map and you see all those red dots. A green dot is an action that individuals can take to change those red dots. So it's a either to disrupt or prevent the violence from ever occurring. So one of the things that we're doing in Alaska is encouraging communities to learn how to implement Green Dot, how to help community members figure out what their skills are. It might just be when you're in a group of your friends and somebody tells a sexist joke saying, that's not cool. I don't want to listen to that. Up to seeing a violent event occurring, maybe your comfort level is to call 911. Maybe it's to take a more active part. So everybody can do something. We can't do everything. Everybody can do something. So one of the challenges for Sexual Assault Awareness Month For the Green Dot communities, Anchorage, Homer, Kenai, Bethel, and Prince of Wales Island, is to respond to the high numbers of sexual assault through the Alaska Victimization Survey and try and get a corresponding number of green dots. And it's going to be going on throughout the month. And on May 5th, we're going to hold a press conference and talk about these communities and how many green dots they have.
Oh, that's great. How can you find out more about this? Is this Green Dot, is this just for Alaska, or is this a nationwide trend?
Green Dot is actually nationwide. It was a program started in Kentucky. We're very fortunate the founder of Green Dot, Dr. Dorothy Edwards, is actually going to be on Juno this Wednesday the 9th and is doing a lunch and learn at the Capitol for the legislature and their staff.
Oh, great.
So, yeah, we're very excited about that. You can also go to AWARE's website, awareak.org, and learn more about the different prevention activities.
Okay. And if you are in trouble here in Juneau, what are the numbers that people can call? There's an 800 number, I would imagine.
I imagine there is an 800 number.
If they looked on AWARE's website.
AWARE's website has it prominently displayed. It's in the phone book in the blue section where all the emergency numbers are listed. I apologize for not bringing that with me as a sort of administrative arm. I know their office number.
Oh, I totally understand.
Yeah, I apologize.
I totally, no, don't. We're absolutely fine. But you should, if you're remotely in a situation where you feel that you will need help, please check out awareak.org.
Yes, and their crisis line is 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It can be anonymous if you need that confidentiality, and there's somebody always available to help.
And isn't 211 another number statewide that you could
yes,
call?
Yes, it is. It's a statewide number, and they can directly connect you with the resource in your area.
That sounds great. All right. Well, Lori, thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you
for all you do. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 7th of April, 2014. It's the birthday of Marjorie Stoneman Douglas, born in Minneapolis, 1890, who became a lifelong crusader for the preservation of the Florida Everglades. She wrote a book about it, Everglades, River of Grass, came out in 1947, in which she wrote, "There are no other Everglades in the world. Nothing anywhere else is like them. Their vast, glittering openness, the racing, free saltness and sweetness of their massive winds under the blue heights of space, the simplicity, the diversity, the related harmony of the forms of life they enclose. It is a river of grass." It's the birthday of Billie Holiday, the jazz singer, Philadelphia, 1915, born Eleonora Fagan, never professionally trained, but by the time she was 18, she'd been performing in many, many clubs. Got her big chance with Benny Goodman's band. Her career took off. She went on to work with Artie Shaw and Lester Young. Studs Terkel saw a performance of Billie Holiday's in 1956. He wrote, "When she went into Willow Weep for Me, you wept. You looked about and saw that the few other customers were also crying in their beer and shot glasses. Nor were they that drunk. Something was still there, that something that distinguishes an artist from a performer, the revealing of the self. Here I be, not for long, but here I be. In sensing her mortality, we sensed our own." And it's the birthday of William Wordsworth, the poet, born in Cumbria, England, 1770. He had four siblings, the children orphaned when he was still a student in grammar school. He loved to take long hikes. Wordsworth went on a walking tour of Europe, left college to do that, hiking through the Alps, found inspiration in nature. Spent some time in France during the French Revolution, fathered a daughter there out of wedlock, went back to England, became a close friend of Samuel Coleridge, and together they published Lyrical Ballads in 1798, poems about nature written in the real language of men, as Wordsworth called it. Here's a poem for today by Tom Hennen, Plains Spadefoot Toad. Toads are smarter than frogs. Like all of us who are not good-looking, they have to rely on their wits. A woman around the beginning of the last century who was in love with frogs wrote a wonderful book on frogs and toads. In it, she says, if you place a frog and a toad on a table, they will both hop. The toad will stop just at the table's edge, but the frog, with its smooth skin and pretty eyes, will leap with all its beauty out into nothingness. I tried it out on my kitchen table, and it is true. That may explain why toads live twice as long as frogs. Frogs are better at romance, though. A pair of spring peepers were once observed whispering sweet nothings for 34 hours. Not by me. The toad and I have not moved. Poem by Tom Hennen, Plains Spadefoot Toad, from his collection Darkness Sticks to Everything, published by Copper Canyon Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by Lumosity.com, a brain training program designed by neuroscientists that has been used by 50 million people worldwide. More at Lumosity.com. And by Anchor Bay Entertainment with August Osage County, directed by John Wells and starring Meryl Streep and Julia Roberts, on Blu-ray and DVD April 8th. Produced by Joy Biles with assistance from Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Support for this program comes from the Hearing Center, providing custom hearing solutions for Alaskan lifestyles and helping patients to experience a natural approach to better hearing. More information at hearingalaska.com.
Okay, it is 3:32 p.m. You're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO News Juno. Jeff Brown's producer and engineer of the show. I'm the talking head, Joan Pardis, for Mondays. And today is April 7th, which is the first day of the Alaska Folk Fest. In the studio with us now is Tom Begich. He's a musician from Anchorage. He's playing tonight at 9:45 p.m., and he's going to play for us right now. Thanks, Tom.
Thanks for having me on. This is a song called Annalee. Played it last year.
Cafe, newspaper unread, missing you today. Got a feeling maybe lost, maybe alone. Three time zones from there, beyond all I've ever known. And I wonder how you are, and I'm no nearer. You're still just as far away from me. I find a way back to you, Annalee, back to you. This car's a broken wreck, just like my heart. I don't know if I'll keep it moving or from falling apart. So I down that cup of coffee and grab those keys to go. An old newspaper and a dollar tip are all that's left to show. I was here wondering how you are, and I'm no nearer. You're still just as far away from me. Will I find a way back to you? And lead back to you. affair, but the echo of that road was my only reply. And then the roar of that asphalt, you know, I wonder why I'm so far away from where you are, and I'm no nearer, still just as far away from me. Will I find a way back to you? This road never seems to get me there. Every mile just a barrier or someplace where I find myself, oh, all alone again. Need to see you and leave. Maybe then I will know who you are, and I'll be nearer, not quite as far away from me. I will find a way back to you, and lead back to you, back to you, and lead back to you, back to you.
Beggett's live in the studio right now. Tom, that was lovely.
Thank you.
That was
very
wonderful.
Much.
So we were talking before we went on the air, and you've been in like something like 20 folk fests.
That's right. Correct? Ever since I was two. No, that's a joke.
It's possible, though.
It's always possible.
It's possible.
Maybe I'm aging poorly. I don't know. But I first came to a fest in 83 to see the festival, and I came with an old friend of mine. Really loved it. Knew one day I wanted to play there, and it was I played by the mid-'80s. I was actually playing fairly regularly, and I did live in Juneau for a few years, so came those years as well.
Right. That is absolutely lovely, and that's the amazing thing about the Folk Fest, is that you have the two-year-olds and the five-year-olds. You have the local
Juneau
color, let's say, and then we also have fabulous musicians like yourself.
Well, thank you.
So as a Folk Fest enthusiast, we always go. It's a fantastic free event, week-long event, full of music. I always find it interesting as a musician. Can you tell me from, like, the other side? Like, what's it like? You're coming down. How long are you staying? You're playing tonight.
Oh, it's actually very crazy. I always try to build my schedule around the festival now. I had a couple of gigs in Sitka over the weekend, Friday and Saturday, for the Herring Fest and the Grind down there, and then I'm going to New Orleans tomorrow morning. So I'll actually be here tonight, but I'll be back. I arranged it so instead of going back home to Anchorage, I come back to Juneau after the New Orleans stint so I can be here for the weekend.
Oh, that sounds great.
Yeah, because I like to try to be here for as many of the days as possible, but it's not always possible to do that, you know, especially if you don't live in Juneau.
Right.
But, man, it's great.
And so it's a foundational piece for you, and why is that? I mean, being devil's advocate, just asking the questions of, as a musician, what is it about Folk Fest that makes you say, wow, man, I have to be in Juneau for this week?
Appreciative audience. You know, every one of us musicians, regardless of whether it's a free gig or a paid gig or whatever, love an appreciative audience. And, you know, it's one of the places where you can get a very large audience who actually will listen to the words, pay attention to the music, and will actually be respectful of the musicians. And you don't always find that. And a lot of festivals don't do that either. But, you know, not all festivals are quite like this one. You have rain or shine, and it's often rain and not so often shine. You have this wonderful enclosed, you know, venue that has great acoustics, really, really strong volunteer corps. It makes it happen. It makes it worthwhile. Plus, you know, I'm an investor. It's not free for me because I like being a member of the Alaska, Alaska Folk Festival. So I pay my annual dues, and I would encourage others to do the same.
I encourage people to do the same, too, as do we, my family, and I certainly pay our dues because we think it's an amazing opportunity to see some fabulous musicians, see our friends and neighbors on stage, and also just celebrate this community. But I'm surprised. So that was really, I'm happy you answered that question, because I wouldn't have thought that way. I would not think that Alaska Folk Fest is unique because it's what I know.
Of course, it's unique.
But I just kind of take it for granted that, oh, yeah, it's around the block. I live downtown. We'll go. So it's really wonderful to say that, to hear from someone else that this is really a unique setting where people are really together, and it's all about the music.
It was a big surprise to me when I started playing outside festivals and realizing that it's a very different environment. I mean, yes, you get a lot of attentive people, hardcores, but a lot of people are at the festivals just for the booths or for the camaraderie or the other pieces that are going on, but I don't find that at this festival at all. There's the camaraderie that happens, of course, and there's, you know, things for sale, the other musicians' work is for sale, but what you really get is a focus on the music or the art that's being presented, because there's some spoken word, of course, that happens at the festival
as
well.
That's great. And obviously, your lyrics were beautiful, so that's a big thing, I would imagine, that you would want people to get the full impact of
for example, tonight I'll play two songs, and I also have a book of sonnets, so I'll read two sonnets.
Oh, nice.
So I'll be able to do a little of both.
Oh, wonderful. So how many CDs do you have?
I have four done, and then Annalise on the one that is actually complete, except for the actual publication of it, which will happen this year.
Okay.
And so that'll be the fifth CD, and then I'll be doing a sixth one this year. That's a collaboration with a spoken word artist, Tim Mason, from Boston. And it's a thing we call Bone Collectors, which is a mixture of music and spoken word. So we're going to be doing a lot of different – this year for me is a big year. I'll be doing a lot of different things with Tim and around the country, Old Songs Festival and some other festivals, Kerrville. And then I'll be doing my thing as well. So.
Sounds great. If you're just joining us, that's Tom Beckett. He's an Anchorage-based musician. He's playing 9:45 tonight. Tom, one more question. So where can people buy your CDs? Will they be available tonight?
They will be available tonight. And the CDs, and I'm hoping he'll also carry the poetry book, but they'll all be available tonight. And then I can always at TomBegich.com, which is B-E-G-I-C-H, TomBegich.com. I always pay for the shipping and handling, and so, you know. That's a good way to buy the CDs. As with many independent musicians, I don't use Amazon anymore because they rip musicians off. And so at least I believe they do. And they're not fair to the small, you know, basically those of us who eke out a living doing this stuff. So.
Right. And obviously you've been doing this for a while, so I would imagine that, you know, the Internet totally changed the game.
Oh, it does. What you find is that people actually discover your music. They invite you to play. I've already got a whole set of gigs in Northeast U.S. for November, because people have come across the music and, you know, they get in touch with you, or they get in touch with people who represent you, and before you know it, you're lining up gigs, and they're listening rooms, they're listening gigs, and that really makes a difference to a musician. So for me, it's the idea of the Internet as a tool has been very, very useful. I maintain a pretty healthy mailing list and try to keep that list informed as to what I'm doing. I also do a blog that talks about more than music, but it's all fun. It's all good.
That sounds great.
It's all good life.
So we are chatting with Tom Begich, and you could find out more at his website at TomBegich.com, or you could go see him tonight at 9:45 at Centennial Hall, or you could listen to him tonight at KRNN, or you could stream him and see him and listen to him from home on KRNN.
Right, I'm wearing a really nifty vest, so you might want to stream me.
Hey, yeah, it looks pretty nice. All right, well, Folk Fest starts tonight, 7 p.m. Tom, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you very much for having
me. We're going to listen to Tom's piece, Albuquerque Road, and we'll be back.
New Orleans, she rolled like a river. Road to the past, path to the future. So New Orleans, where you roll like a river, as you carry me on down. That's breaking. How can you hold on without losing control? walking down that street. Ooh, out in New Orleans. Just might come face to face with your soul. It's New Orleans where you roll like a river. Come on, baby, roll, baby, roll.
The Path of Prosperity Business Development Competition is back for Southeast Alaska entrepreneurs. The program aspires to launch or grow businesses in Southeast. Applications are due May 30th. There is an informational webinar April 8th at 5:30 p.m. Visit us online at www.p2pweb.org to join the webinar and learn more about the competition. This message is brought to you by the Hawnee Community Development Fund and the Nature Conservancy.
He's on the air, and he's also in the studio. So we were just listening to a PSA. That was Sean Blumenschein who was talking. Sean Blumenschein's in the studio today with Brian Hulse. They are members of the steering committee of the Maritime Festival. Hello, guys. Thanks for coming by.
Hello.
So the Maritime.
Did you intentionally do that?
Jeff Brown, he's the producer and engineer of the show. He's a sneaky and intelligent fellow.
I love it.
So let's talk Maritime Fest. This will be the fifth Maritime Fest.
That's right.
Okay, let's start with the very beginning. What is the Maritime Fest?
What is a Maritime Festival? It is a way to celebrate Juneau's maritime commerce, culture, and history.
Oh, cool.
And the idea really came about as part of a group of people interested in trying to get our community to appreciate even more deeply all of our roots to all things maritime. You know, the maritime economy, seafood industry, for example, the Coast Guard. There's the shipping that's involved. Everything about Juneau is maritime related, from our very history to 10,000 years ago, when as people lived in this part of the world. And so there hasn't been an event that's focused on that, brings us all down to the waterfront. And so that was 5 years ago. That was the idea. Let's raise awareness and have some fun at it. And we've done a great job on the fun part, and I think we're raising some awareness as well about the importance. So it's a great one-day event.
Great. And when people come down, it's May 10th this year.
May 10th.
When people come down to the waterfront by Marine Park and the whole waterfront from the library all the way down to the
Marine Park Plaza and Pavilion, they call
great,
it.
Great. Thank you. So what can people expect? Let's say people haven't come down. Like, they're going to say, it's a Maritime Fest. Okay, if I'm not going to go on my boat that day, what am I going to see downtown?
Right. Oh, hey, sure, I'll take that one. Okay, there's actually going to be there's a ton of events. There's not going to be anything lacking for the Maritime Festival, for sure. So they have everything from a fillet contest to a tug of war to a marinade contest. There's entertainment. There's tours of boats. They're going to actually have a boat show. You can go down to the docks. Gold Bell is one of our participants, and they open up their dock and have a whole slew of boats down there. There's boat building. Home Depot donates that.
Oh, wow.
And there'll be food, of course, seafood. We get considerable donations from, like, Taku Smokeries and Alaska Glacier Seafoods.
And ASME.
And ASME, yes, thank you, ASME.
Okay, so it sounds like it's a whole family event.
Absolutely.
I just want you guys to talk about it. But it's a great kid event. There's lots of kid activities. There's adult activities. I think there's a beer garden.
Fun to be on time because it kicks off at 11 a.m. with the One People Canoe Society. And so they do a traditional, they canoe in their large dugout canoes, or I guess they look like dugout canoes. I think they're I don't know exactly what they're made of, but I understand that they're very close to what they
used to
use.
But it's always wonderful to see that.
It's incredible. They arrive with the regalia. They come from Douglas, paddling over at 11 a.m. Then there's a traditional welcome ceremony that occurs that's really fun to watch. And there's some native dancing right at the beginning. And then we just go to opens up to festival 60 vendors and just a day of fun on the waterfront.
And that goes usually to like
5
p.m. Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So how does something, when you're on the steering committee, how does something this big
it definitely
happen?
It takes a lot of people. I mean, I wouldn't say it's definitely no one person that makes this all happen. It's definitely a community effort. You know, there's a number of us on the steering committee. I want to say like 6 or 7 or so. And then there's a larger committee that is like all the participants, people that donate, that participate, that, you know, are involved in some way. So it's really just assigning, you know, all the different components and giving it, you know, ownership to the people that are involved. And then, of course, raising funds. And, you know, this doesn't pay for itself. It's a free event to the public. So it's really a matter of reaching out to people involved in the maritime industry. And you know, and their generosity and charitable giving is really what makes this event actually happen, combined with, of course, the volunteers and the time that it takes for everyone to pull this together.
Right. So if somebody's listening and they say, well, I do want to donate, or I want to work on it. I've gone a couple of times, or I haven't, and I think it sounds great, and I really want to help out. What can people do?
Go to JunoMaritimeFestival.org, JunoMaritimeFestival.org. And I'm really glad you mentioned that, because the event has gone on 4 years, and this fifth year we were, you know, the steering committee got together, and we were really wondering, can we pull this off? And Sean has something he wants to share about part of the solution. And we sort of put the word out there, you know, is this going to happen, or are people going to rally behind it? We had a great response because it really is driven by volunteers. We need more volunteers, mm-hmm. and we need additional sponsors to really make this the event that people want it to be. But it's going to happen. And in one of the great ideas that the committee came up with, and Sean has a big hand in that, was to put together a separate fundraiser to try to take a little bit of pressure off the free event and raise some resources.
Absolutely. So what we kind of decided to do this year was, you know, there was a big question as to whether or not the event was going to actually happen, just due to the lack of enough funds to pull it off. Certainly don't have a problem with people showing up. So we decided to try a separate dedicated fundraiser, you know, dedicated to raising funds for this event to happen each year, and we're calling it Port Starboard Progressive Dinner.
Mm.
And so it's a fundraising dinner. You know, we're selling tickets. It's a progressive dinner. So it's going to actually start at Salt, which is formerly Zephyr.
Mm-hmm.
And then that'll be appetizers. And then we will go to the Baranoff,
mm-hmm.
Which will be the main course. It'll be two courses there. And then it'll end with dessert at Rockwell's. And so they're all kind of like close to each other. There's corporate sponsorship tables that are for sale if somebody wants to buy a table. They come with 10 tickets, and it also makes you a sponsorship for the Maritime Festival as well. So you get, you know, recognition at both events, and the money really goes to support the festival itself.
Sounds
and
great.
You get a fun evening.
Oh, it sounds really nice. It
Absolutely.
Sounds really nice strolling around downtown, and even if it's raining, it's not very far.
Exactly. We did keep it all close.
So when is the...
It's the night before, so it's the 9th. So
okay.
The festival is the 10th, and the dinner is the evening of the 9th. We also even have an after hours, you know, tickets are $100, so it's, and it includes all three venues. And we also do have an after-hours event upstairs of Rockwell starting at 9. If you don't want to maybe spend $100 or don't want to do dinner, you can do something afterwards. It's $25, and it's still a way to go ahead and support the event, and that's a little more affordable.
And do you have a band or a DJ?
There'll be a band and a DJ. There'll be appetizers.
Oh.
We're going to deck it out. We're going to go with the whole maritime theme, so we're going to decorate it, make it seem, you know, very maritime-ish.
Uh-huh. I'm not going to ask if there'll be pirates there, but whatever.
There might be.
You never know. Now that I've said it, you know,
right,
you know
right.
Someone's going to show up with a pirate.
Right?
All right. So that's May 9th is the fundraiser. It sounds great.
Correct.
You start at Salt. You have some appetizers. Salt's the... It's under new ownership.
Absolutely.
It's new name, too. It used to be formerly Zephyr, right there on the corner across from Wells Fargo. And then you go to the Baranoff. You have two courses there and end at Rockwell and then go up to the ballroom. Rockwell's been recently renovated. Downtown's changing and
Absolutely.
Hustling and growing.
And then after you finish dancing, you can come down and help set up tents in the evening.
That's what you want people to do, yeah.
You can put your volunteer effort in.
And so people want to volunteer or
Absolutely.
Buy tickets or contribute funds to the Maritime Festival. How do they do it?
JunoMaritimeFestival.org is your one place to go. There is, you can also, JADC plays a a supporting role in this. Tabitha in our office will take your call as well, 523-2300, and we'll help you if you have any questions about what you need. But all that information is on the website, at JunoMaritimeFestival.org.
Sounds good. We're going to have to wrap it up. But besides JEDC and Ha'ani, who are the other people involved with the steering committee, other organizations that
this
happen?
Jeff White from Gold Belt. He's been with us for 5 years. Ian Fisk, a local fisherman. Catherine Nickerson works at the Juno Empire. Wendy Zerngibel at the U.S. Forest Service. Mary Yucatel, I think she has a job at the
Bartlett Foundation.
Kathy Hildry, community volunteer. Everyone knows Kathy well. And Sean and I.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's a lot of people putting together, just the key core
people.
We're
the steering committee, but then there's a planning committee that involves lots of folks.
That sounds great. Well, thank you both for making this happen. I've been to the event a couple of times, and it's fantastic, and I plan on doing it again. And let's see if maybe May 9th I need to attend a progressive dinner. But I'll go to Juno Maritime.
.org. Juno Maritime Festival.
There we go. Juno Maritime Festival. Well, we could just search for it and we'll
you'll find
pop
it.
Up. Thanks so much for coming in today. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
This is Bird Note. It's before dawn this April morning on a North Dakota prairie. Sitting quietly near a rise of ground, we begin to hear eerie whoops and cackling. And then what sounds like little motors running. At first light, we see the source of this otherworldly chorus. Male sharp-tailed grouse performing their elaborate mating dances. The size of small chickens, they dance on a matted patch of ground called a lek. Together, they're stomping their feet, extending their wings, and zipping around the lek. Then, at the same instant, they stop, stock still. All this to impress the female grouse, observing from the sidelines. This wondrous, strange display is rare. Throughout the world, very few species of birds, perhaps fewer than 100, use leks when breeding. With oil and gas drilling and the conversion of grasslands to agriculture, habitat for sharp-tailed grouse is becoming scarcer and more fragmented. This morning, the Lostwood National Wildlife Refuge in North Dakota gives our birds a place to reenact their ancient ritual and begin the cycle of their lives anew. To see videos, begin at birdnote.org.
All righty, it's going to be raining tonight, heavy at times. Tomorrow, rain showers. Tomorrow night, rain showers. The Folk Fest starts at 7 p.m. You can listen at KRNN. Tonight, CBJ has its assembly meeting. You can listen at 7 p.m. on KTOO.org. That's Todd Grevy in the background. He is going to be at the 360 Performance Space Saturday, April 12th. Have a great week. Scott Burden will be sitting here. He's the producer, engineer, and the talking head for Tuesdays. I'm Joan Partis. Jeff Brown's the producer and engineer of the show. Thank you for listening to Juno Afternoon.
This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. We rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay,